Mahabharata, Chapter 17, The Rajasuya Sacrifice. Arjuna was becoming successful in his conquests. He first overpowered the king of the Kulindas, and then the Anastas, and then the Kalkutas. He defeated the many kings on the island continent of Sakala, and then encountered King Bhagadatta, a powerful warrior. The battle with Bhagadatta lasted 8 days, but finally, when the king found himself overpowered, he agreed to accept Yudhisthira's rule. Arjuna continued toward the north. He reached the mountains and vanquished the many barbarian tribes. Arriving in Kashmir, he subdued the region Kshatriyas and then passed over the Himalayas. To the north of the mountains lay the land inhabited by the Kimpurushas, semi-celestial beings born of Yaksha women. Incensed at the approach of a human army, they fought a fierce battle, but finally Arjuna subdued them. The Pandava then conquered the land of the Guhakas, another tribe of celestial fighters, followed by a region inhabited by Gandharvas. Finally Arjuna arrived in Harivarsha, the land where the northern Kurus dwelt. At the border, a number of powerful, large-bodied guards stopped them. They said, "O Arjuna, this land cannot be entered by humans. If you try, you will perish along with your army. Indeed, even if you were able to enter, you would not see anything, because human eyes cannot see this land or its residents. Go back. There is nothing to be conquered here. Your conquests are already sufficient. We are pleased with you and will happily offer you a gift. What would you like?" Arjuna bowed respectfully to the divine beings and said, "I desire Yudhisthira's imperial dignity. If you accept him as emperor of this wide earth, then please give something as tribute." The northern Kurus immediately offered Arjuna a large number of celestial clothes and ornaments, saying, "We know you and your brothers to be great servants of the Supreme Lord. Go now with our blessings. May you always gain victory." Taking the wealth he had won, Arjuna returned to Indraprastha and reported his success to Yudhisthira. Bhima had in the meanwhile marched to the east with a powerful army. He first encountered the Panchalas, who happily accepted Yudhisthira's rule. Then he overcame in battle the Gandakas, Videhas, and Dasharanas. One by one, Bhima subdued the many kings in the east. When he reached Chedi, he was received graciously by its king, Shishupal, who inquired, "My dear Pandava, what are you bent upon doing?" Bhima told him about the Rajasuya, and Shishupal smiled. He agreed to attend and offer tribute to Yudhisthira. Although he had an old enmity with Krishna, he respected the Pandavas as righteous and powerful rulers. The king offered Bhima his hospitality for some days, and the Pandava continued on his way. Bhima overpowered the kingdoms of Kumara, Kosala, and Ayodhya. He reached the wetlands at the foot of the Himalayas and subjugated all the kings in that area. Moving on from there, Bhima encountered the mighty race of the Matsyas and the Malavas. Such noble Kshatriyas had never known defeat, and out of pride in their strength and reputation, they felt obliged to resist Bhima's request that they surrender to Yudhisthira, although they bore the Pandavas no enmity. Eventually, however, Bhima vanquished them in battle. Either by diplomacy or force, Bhima subjugated dozens of kings. Many of them joined him as he marched on, bringing tribute to offer to Yudhisthira in Indraprastha. Those kings who did not surrender were slain by the Pandava. Others gave him profuse wealth. Bhima amassed enormous quantities of gold, silver, gems, valuable cloth, sandalwood, blankets, carpets, coral, and ivory, all of which he packed on the backs of a long train of elephants and asses. Bhima even subjugated the powerful Karna, ruler of Anga, as well as all other kings in the region who were loyal to him and Duryodhan. After conquering many barbarian tribes, he finally returned to Indraprastha and offered everything that he had acquired to Yudhisthira. On his expeditions to the south, Sahadev had defeated many kings, Surasena, Adiraj, Dantavakra. He reached Kuntiboja's kingdom, and his grandfather received him with great affection. From there he went on to conquer the kingdoms of Jambaka, Sheka, and Avanti. After crossing the Narmada River, he arrived at Bojakota, where he fought a long battle with King Bhishmaka. Although Bhishmaka was favorable to the Pandavas, had been happy to see his daughter Rukmini become Krishna's principal queen, he wanted to test the Pandavas' power. After 2 days fighting, he admitted defeat at Sahadev's hands. Like his brothers, Sahadev subdued numerous kingdoms by both diplomacy and force. When he came to Mahismati, he encountered King Nila, who was a friend of the fire god. As Sahadev stood in battle against the king, it appeared as if he and his entire army were on fire. Flames sprang from the earth and surrounded them on all sides. Thousands of soldiers and chariots were reduced to ashes. Sahadev even saw his own life threatened as fire swept toward him. He could understand that Agni was assailing him. The Pandava quickly dismounted from his chariot and knelt in prayer to the fire god. O exalted one, you are the mouth of the gods, into which all oblations are placed. You sanctify everything. From you the Vedas have sprung, and you are sacrifice itself. O greatest of gods, please endow me with your energy. O bearer of sacrificial offerings, do not place obstacles before Yudhisthira's sacrifice. As Sahadev prayed, the flames gradually died down. Agni then appeared in person before him and said, O descendant of Kuru, rise up. I was only trying you. I understand your purposes and those of your brother, Dharmaraj. I always protect this city, but I shall help you accomplish your aims. Agni then went to King Nila and told him to receive Sahadev with honor and offer Yudhisthira tribute. The king explained how his beautiful daughter had won Agni's heart and now they were married. Thus he protected the city. On his order, however, the king would gladly accept Yudhisthira's rule. Sahadev moved on to conquer various cannibal races, including one powerful tribe known as the Kalamukas. They were a cross between Rakshasas and humans. He also fought a long battle with the Vanaras at Kishkindya, headed by Mainda and Vivida, until they finally agreed to accept Yudhisthira's righteous rule. The tribes of the Nishadas, Yavanas, Pandyas, Dravidas, Andas, Talavanas, and many others were all subjugated. At last, he returned to Indraprastha with vast amounts of wealth. In the west, Nakula conquered the hilly countries, followed by the deserts. The Matamayurkas, Sivis, Trigartas, Amvashtas, and Karnatas were all subdued. He reached Madras, where his uncle Shalya received him affectionately and gave him great wealth for the sacrifice. Then he went on to conquer the Malecha and Yavana tribes on the west coast. Having fully established Yudhisthira's supremacy in that direction, he too returned to Indraprastha. Yudhisthira joyfully received all his brothers back from their expeditions. None now stood in opposition to his authority. His treasury was also so full that it could not be emptied even in 100 years. It was almost time for the Rajasuya. Krishna, as promised, returned to Indraprastha, accompanied by his wives and relatives. The great Yadu and Vrishni army also arrived with him, and as they entered the city, they filled it with the rattle of chariot wheels and the blast of conch shells. The already inexhaustible ocean of gems that the Pandavas possessed was filled to overflowing when Krishna presented his gifts. When Krishna and his relatives had all been properly received, Yudhisthira sat with him in the assembly hall and said, O Krishna, it is for you alone that this vast earth has been brought under my sway. Indeed, only by your grace has this been possible. I wish now to devote all my wealth to the Brahmins and to Agni, the carrier of sacrificial offerings. please grant me permission to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. Krishna prays Yudhisthira's many virtues. You deserve the imperial dignity without any doubt. Perform the sacrifice. If it is successful, I shall consider it as my own success. I am always seeking your good and will do whatever I can to assist. Appoint me in some office, and I shall obey your commands. Yudhisthira asked Vyasadeva to take charge of the sacrifice. Thus Vyasadeva himself became the chief priest. Then he appointed Yajnavalkya, Shoshama, Paila, and Domya, rishis, as his assistants. Together they constructed the 6 sacrificial altars and the vast compound marked out at a sacred place near the city. Yudhisthira had arranged for the construction of mansions to house the thousands of kings in attendance, as well as quarters for the other classes of men. Innumerable Brahmins were streaming into Indraprastha, and each was received with gifts of wealth and offered comfortable accommodation. When the party from Hastinapur, headed by Dhritarashtra and Bhishma, arrived, Yudhisthira personally received them with love. He bowed at his elders' feet and said, "All my wealth and my dominions are yours. Please command me as you desire." Bhishma, Drona, and Kripa lifted Yudhisthira from his obeisance and embraced him. They shed tears of happiness to see his opulence and success. From their first hearing that Yudhisthira was planning the sacrifice, they had been overjoyed. Even Dhritarashtra was happy, sending word of his approval to Yudhisthira. After all, the Pandavas were enhancing the glory of their dynasty, firmly establishing the Kuru's position as world emperors, a position which had been lost since Pandu's demise. Holding Yudhisthira by his shoulders, Bhishma said, "It is fortunate indeed that we see you today ready to perform the great Rajasuya sacrifice. Surely this is by the Supreme Lord's grace. You are a fit person to acquire the imperial dignity. Please allow us to be your servants and give to us some post in the sacrifice." After consulting with Vyasadeva, Yudhisthira asked Bhishma and Drona to oversee the organization for the sacrifice. Dushasan was put in charge of food distribution, while Ashvatthama was solicited to look after the Brahmins. Duryodhan was appointed to receive all the gifts that were brought for Yudhisthira, and Vidura became master of the treasury. Krishna, with a desire to gain their blessings, personally undertook the task of washing the Brahmins' feet as they arrived. The sacrificial arena was soon crowded with effulgent rishis chanting hymns from the Samaveda. Among the sages assisting the sacrifice were Bharadvaj, Gotama, Ashita, Vashishta, Vishramrita, Parasaram, Kashyapa, and many others who had descended from the higher regions of the universe. The celestials, seated upon their shining chariots, came in person as the offerings of ghee were poured into the fires, with the utensils made entirely of gold. Before everyone's eyes, the gods, headed by Brahma, Shiva, and Indra, took their places in the arena. The gold platforms around the sacrificial arena, being crowded with celestials and rishis, looked as beautiful as the sky, studded with innumerable stars. Narada Rishi attended the sacrifice, and he gazed in wonder at all the personalities in attendance. Amid the thousands of kings, he saw Krishna, shining like the brilliant sun. Narada marveled at how the original Supreme Person was present on earth in human form. The Rishi knew that Krishna must be working out some divine plan. After many days, Yudhisthira was crowned as emperor. On the final day of the sacrifice, the Brahmins prepared the juice of the soma plant to offer to the great personalities in attendance. First, they would be worshipped with due ritual, then invited to partake of the divine beverage. Bhishma said to Yudhisthira, "You should now select the most important person at this assembly and worship him with argya. The guru, the priest, the relative, the snataka, the friend and the king, These six all deserve this worship. Therefore worship all these kings and Brahmins, starting with he whom you consider foremost. Yudhisthira asked his counselors who they felt was fit to receive the worship. There was some uncertainty. Some suggested Brahma, while others Shiva, and some Vyasadeva. Yudhisthira then asked Bhishma, O Kuru chief, who do you consider to be the best of all those present here today? Who should receive the first worship, the Agra Puja? Bhishma replied, As the sun shines among all luminous objects, so Krishna shines among all kings. He is without doubt the most worthy of the first offering. Yudhisthira agreed fully, as did Sahadev, who on Bhishma's command stood up and announced to the assembly, Emperor Yudhisthira would like to offer the Agra Puja to Krishna. Even though the principal gods are present, they are all subordinate to Krishna. He is the ultimate goal of all yogis and ascetics who aim for self-realization. But what need is there for me to speak of his glories? All of you exalted personalities are well aware of Krishna's position. Indeed, Krishna is the supersoul of all. Therefore, by satisfying him, we will satisfy all created beings. Sahadev continued to glorify Krishna for several more minutes. When he stopped speaking, the rishis, celestials, and assembled kings resoundingly approved. Seeing his decision confirmed by the Brahmins and gods, Yudhisthira began to worship Krishna with tears in his eyes. Showers of flowers fell from the sky as he offered him the argya and the soma rasa. Everyone cheered and stood in respect as Krishna was worshipped. But a few monarchs had not agreed. Shishupal in particular was outraged, and he remained seated while the offering was made to Krishna. He was seething. Krishna was his enemy. Shishupal had once been about to marry the beautiful Rukmini, but Krishna had kidnapped her on her wedding day and married her himself. From that day forward, his enmity toward Krishna had only increased. This offering of honor was too much to tolerate. He suddenly leapt to his feet and began to roar angrily. Surely destiny is supreme. Otherwise, how could this injustice have occurred? How could those present have been influenced by the words of a foolish boy? I cannot agree with Sahadev's statements. There are many personalities here much more worthy of worship than Krishna. The great rishis, the gods, and all the earthly kings present. Krishna is not even a king. He is nothing but the son of a cowherd man. We cannot even ascertain his caste or social position. He seems to care nothing for Vedic injunctions and principles. How then can he be worshipped in this assembly? Shishupal frowned. His coppery eyes challenged those in the assembly. Krishna is neither the eldest, the wisest, nor the most powerful person present. There are many others present who are more qualified than Krishna in every way. Yudhisthira could have worshipped any one of them before selecting Krishna. Placing his hand on the long sword hanging from his belt, the Chedi king furiously concluded, We have paid tribute to Yudhisthira, thinking him to be virtuous. That was clearly a mistake. He has insulted us today by worshipping Krishna, who most unrighteously had Jarasandha killed. Now we can see what sort of men are Yudhisthira and his brothers, as well as Bhishma, who has approved of this madness. Shishupal turned to address Krishna. As for you, Krishna, why have you allowed yourself to be worshipped like this? You are exactly like a dog that has stolen the offerings of ghee meant for a sacrifice and is licking them up in solitude. As a wife is to an impotent man, or a beautiful sight to a blind man, so is this worship to you, who are not even a king. Shishupal strode toward the gate of the arena, followed by several other kings who were in agreement. Other kings rose in anger upon hearing Shishupal's words. Some left the assembly, censuring the Chedi king, while others took up their swords and shields in order to fight with him. Bhishma at once stood up, and justified the selection of Krishna. He spoke fearlessly, checking Shishupal as he walked away. He who does not approve of the worship of Krishna, who is the oldest person in the universe, deserves no respect at all. O King of Chedi, we do not worship Krishna out of material motivations. Many times I have heard from those very advanced in knowledge that Krishna is the Supreme Person, in whom the universe itself is established. Foolish men like you can never understand this. Bhishma gave numerous reasons why Krishna should be worshipped. He described the many wonderful feats Krishna had achieved. Even as a child, he had slain the many powerful demons Kamsa had sent to kill him. In the end, he had even killed Kamsa himself. Once Krishna had lifted a great hill with one hand and held it for a full week. Bhishma challenged any king to match Krishna's prowess in battle, or any wealthy man to display more riches. No one could show more knowledge or wisdom than Krishna. In every way, Krishna was possessed of superlative opulences. When Bhishma stopped speaking, Sahadev rose and lifted his left foot. He was angry and his voice boomed. If there is any man here who feels Krishna should not be worshipped, let him step forward. I shall place my left foot on his head. Who will give me reply? As Sahadev spoke, the sky reverberated with voices crying, "Excellent! Well spoken!" And showers of flowers fell on his head. Narada then spoke, "Those men who will not worship Krishna should be considered dead, even though breathing. They should not even be gazed upon." Shishupal became even angrier. He turned toward his supporters and shouted, "Here I am, ready to lead you. What needs to be considered? Let us stand in battle against the Yadus and the Pandavas." Many kings had been agitated by Shishupal's speech. They now gathered around the Chedi king. Weapons clashed as they were drawn, and armor clanked as it was donned. Shishupal continued to stir his supporters. "Let us act quickly so that this sacrifice may not be concluded successfully. Everyone should know that we did not agree to Krishna being worshipped." Yudhisthira's supporters also prepared themselves for battle. The assembly of monarchs looked like the ocean rising at the full moon. Yudhisthira was alarmed to see his sacrifice about to be spoiled, even as it had almost reached its conclusion. He turned anxiously to Bhishma and said, "O grandsire, these kings are seized by wrath and seem bent upon battle. What should I do to avoid my sacrifice being spoiled and my subjects being harmed?" Bhishma laughed and replied in a voice which Shishupal could hear clearly, "O best of Kurus, have no fear that Shishupal can create any disturbance in Krishna's presence. He and his supporters are like a pack of dogs barking at a sleeping lion. Only as long as Madhava does not act can they exhibit their valor. He is the creator and destroyer of all beings in the universe. Shishupal has very little intelligence. He will surely take all these kings with him to death's abode. It seems that Krishna now desires to take back to himself the power he gave to Shishupal. That is why the Chedi king's intelligence has become so perverse." Shishupal could not tolerate Bhishma's words, and he screamed in response, "O most infamous wretch of your race, are you not afraid to speak such words in front of all these kings? With you as their leader, the Kurus are like blind men being led by another blind man. You have simply given us pain by describing the deeds of the powerless cowherd Krishna. Arrogant and foolish as you are, it is a wonder that your tongue does not split into 100 parts." Shishupal railed on, insulting both Bhishma and Krishna. In his opinion, the so-called wonderful deeds Bhishma had described were nothing. Anyone could have done them. What was so amazing about lifting a small hill for a few days, or killing a few inferior demons? "O wretch, although you pose as a virtuous and learned man, we can see your real nature. You are sinful and ignorant. Only because you are impotent have you taken your famous vow of celibacy. You deserve to die at the hands of these kings." Hearing his noble grandfather insulted so grievously, Bhima became enraged. His large eyes, resembling lotus petals, expanded even further in anger, and they turned coppery red. His brow wrinkled into three lines, and he ground his teeth. He stood up, appearing like death preparing to swallow every creature at the end of the yuga. But Bhishma caught him by the hand and restrained him. He appeased Bhima with gentle counsel. Like the ocean, unable to transgress its shores, Bhima felt unable to disobey the Kuru elder. He sat down again, glaring at Shishupal. Shishupal laughed. "Release him, Bhishma. Let all these kings see him burnt down by my prowess, as an insect is destroyed by fire." Bhima again started up, but Bhishma stopped him with a glance. Fixing Shishupal with his angry eyes, he then began to narrate the Chedi monarch's history. Shishupal had been born with three eyes and four arms. As soon as he took birth, he screamed and brayed like an ass. An invisible voice from the heavens prophesied that he would grow up powerful and fearless, but that one day he would be killed by a great hero. When Shishupal's mother had asked the voice who that hero would be, the voice replied that the child's extra arms and third eye would disappear when he was placed upon the lap of the person who would one day kill him. This came to pass when young Shishupal was placed upon Krishna's lap. Horrified when she realized that Krishna would kill her son, Shishupal's mother had begged, "Please grant me a boon, O Krishna. Pardon my son for the offenses he may commit against you. I desire his welfare and long life." Krishna replied, "O blessed lady, even when Shishupal deserves to be killed, I will forgive him. Indeed, I shall tolerate 100 offenses from him." Bhishma concluded, "This wretch is thus destined to be killed by Krishna. His time has come. Therefore he roars like this, caring nothing for ourselves or the infallible and unknowable Krishna. A man on the verge of death loses his senses and will say anything." Shishupal again attacked Bhishma, delivering another harsh speech. Bhishma waited for him to finish and replied calmly, "O Chedi king, cease your rantings. There will never be an end to arguments, for words may always be answered with words. Here is Govinda. Let anyone who opposes him now stand before him in battle. Thus you will attain liberation, and your soul enter his transcendental body." Shishupal roared like an enraged lion. Then Krishna spoke so that everyone could hear. "This cruel-hearted man is my aunt's son, yet he always wishes me and my relatives ill. Once, when I was away from Dwarka, he came and set fire to my city. He killed many citizens and took away many more in chains. This wretch even stole saintly Akrura's wife. On another occasion, cunningly disguising himself, he ravished the princess of Vishala, who was the intended bride of the Kurusha king. Obviously desiring a speedy death, he even tried to possess the chaste Rukmini. I have tolerated these and numerous other insults at his hands, only because I made a promise to my aunt. But I promised to bear only 100 insults, and that number has now become full. I shall therefore slay Shishupal now in your presence." Having heard Krishna's words, the kings reproached Shishupal, but he merely laughed and said, "O Krishna, how do you speak of Rukmini, who was intended for me, but whom you stole by slyness and deceit? You cannot call yourself a man. Do whatever you will. Whether you are angry or friendly, what harm can you do me?" As Shishupal spoke, Krishna thought of his discus weapon, the Sudarshan Chakra. It immediately appeared in his hand, and Krishna raised it above his head. Releasing the chakra, he said, "I have kept my promise to my aunt. Shishupal's offenses have now exceeded the number specified, and now I will kill him." The chakra left Krishna's hand and streaked towards Shishupal, even as he continued his tirade. The king tried desperately to draw his sword to fend off the chakra, but the powerful disc weapon was too swift. It caught him on the neck and immediately severed his head from his body. The mighty king fell like a cliff struck by a thunderbolt. As he dropped to the ground, a fearful effulgence was seen to leave his body and enter into Krishna. Rain fell from a cloudless, thundering sky, and the earth trembled. No one spoke. Shishupal's supporters were angry, but dared say nothing. The rishis, however, were pleased by Krishna's act and praised him for it. Gradually, the assembly became peaceful again. Yudhisthira ordered his brothers to perform Shishupal's funeral ceremony without delay. He then installed Shishupal's son as king of Chedi, and the last ceremonies were performed to complete the Rajasuya. Along with Draupadi, Yudhisthira took the final ritualistic bath in the sacred Yamuna, and the sacrifice was over. After some days, the kings departed for their own kingdoms. The Pandavas accompanied them to the outskirts of Indraprastha and bid them farewell. Yudhisthira begged Krishna to stay longer, however, and he consented, although he sent his party back to Dwarka, while he and his queens remained behind. During his stay in Indraprastha, Krishna was personally served by Draupadi, and he developed much affection for the Pandava queen. One day, when she had served him some fruits, he began paring them with a knife. Suddenly, the knife slipped, and he nicked his finger. Blood flowed from the cut, and seeing this, Draupadi immediately tore a piece from her fine sari and handed it to him to bandage his finger. Taking the cloth, Krishna smiled and said, "O gentle lady, I will surely repay this gift of your sari." Draupadi looked down modestly and thanked Krishna, who wrapped his finger with the strip of silk. He then stood up and left the room.